Folder 91, June 1981. 91 J70. The dream I had, in which the more you scrutinized reality, the more real, substantial, and articulated it became. But you had the clock time taped voice to remind you at 15-minute intervals that this was a spurious world you were yourself generating. This, the voice, is what the Bible is. Hence, it can be said the Bible somehow is the real world, and this is not. 91 J77. Answer: I saw Christ. Question: What did he look like? Living information, because he is the logos on which the universe is based. Ultra ontology at the heart of the universe. I think this is clear in Vallis to the theology minded. Anyhow, now that I know and can express what I saw, I should publicly say so. Please do it. 91 J79. Like seeing it twice, behind the universe and also camouflaged in the universe, and replacing it by transubstantiation, a double impression of it. What you see is number two, and infer number one. 91 J89. What if creation, verb, was accidental, a byproduct of the Godhead's self-awareness expressed by it uttering the word, perhaps Anoki? Its self-awareness gave rise to the word. The word, in turn, gave rise to creation, a splitting entropic process. Oh yes, the word gave rise to the first plurality, the forms. So the Godhead inhales this exhalation in stage four. The universe, then, is an unavoidable consequence of the Godhead's self-awareness. The uttered word is a sort of map or blueprint or schematic of the Godhead itself, and so in a sense is God as knowing or wisdom. The Godhead may have foreseen the consequences of its moment of self-awareness, the uttering of the word or self-map, and put into action the salvific response to penetrate the lowest, farthest level, what I call the trash stratum, which is debased, and thereby reverse the falling, splitting, and sinking. The rigidity of the Torah is indicative of this fall, and Jesus's mastery over the law, the indubitable sign of restoration and salvation. This is a fusion of Christianity and Neoplatonism, and is like Origenes' system. The word, the map, was somehow only an abstraction of what it represented. The fall involved in the map, logos, of self-knowledge may have to do with the map paradox. By its very nature, the map fell short of the reality, God, it depicted, thus ushering in the fall, which did not end there. Once started, it had to take its course. This is the crisis in the Godhead of Gnosticism. It progressively knew itself less and less, falling into forgetfulness of its own identity, viz., the very act of self-knowledge, Anoki, triggered off a vicious regress of progressively less and less self-knowledge until, at the most debased and forgetful stage, it awakens itself to restored self-awareness, Salvador Salvandus. Each ring, emanation, or level is an inferior copy of the one above it, with necessary loss of detail, i.e., form, integrity. The map is a copy of God. The forms, a copy of the map. The space-time universe, a copy of the forms. And then restoration occurs not by chance, but by, due to, the absolute foreknowledge, a priori, of the provident Godhead. Hence, my dream of the 15-minute taped warning reminders while I am in a spurious reality that I myself generate. This even brings in Tatvamasi. Wow. Now all you have to do is bring in Yaldabaoth. You have, then, the dialectic. Hey, here's an idea. In this fallen, debased, forgetful state, we misperceive God, the sole God, this way. There is only one God. But at this level, our view of him is distorted into the illusory figure of Yaldabaoth, so that even if and when we become aware of God, we are alienated from him. He assumes to us, the fault lies with us, a horrific, punishing, cruel, deranged aspect. But this just shows the debased, occluded state we are in. He is trying to signal to us to wake up. But not knowing our condition, we misperceive him this way, i.e., Palmer Eldritch. This is both a symptom of our fall and, as well, perhaps the greatest tragedy, this alienation from God. Since creation is a hypostasis of God, as the Sufis say, one should look for beauty in it as manifestations of the divine. There is no sharp disjunction between God and creation because of the intermediary word and the forms. Plotinus's concept of concentric rings of emanation sums it up. We must totally trust God and his wisdom, that the value of his uttering the word, his becoming self-aware, anoki, more than offsets the unavoidable fall engendered by it, as God explained to me last November, the pain, ordeal of this separation and fall and forgetfulness and alienation is more than offset by the positive gain sought for. Thus, the uttering of the word is to be regarded as a good event, and each level thereafter as ultimately good, which fits in with my ecstasy in finding him again and begging to be kept away a little longer, a sort of paradox of mystical ecstatic love. 91, J92. The world is a place of such beauty as to be symbolic of salvation, yet not apparently for man, regarding Kafka. I cannot connect directly to the world. I must do so through a mediator, what I call, know of as, the act's lens grid. I can see the world, and I can see its beauty, but its beauty is not for me, and hence will not save me. But, seen through the mediator, the beauty becomes mine and will save me. This refers to the basic Gnostic category of ontological Geworfenheit and das Unheimliche. Note: German terms used by Martin Heidegger. Geworfenheit, thrownness, the quality of finding ourselves already thrown into existence as if by accident. Das Unheimliche, the uncanny, literally, not at home. End note. Because of this condition for me, the world's beauty is deformed, because it is not mine. It is fremd to me. The mediator changes this. He comes between me and world, and as a result, world's beauty is eigentlich, actual, mine, my own, and will save me. Who is, what is, this mediator, and how does he do it? He must partly partake of what I am and partly partake of what world is. Like Kessler's Holon, he has two faces. He faces me and he faces world. Note: in The Ghost in the Machine, 1967, Arthur Kessler defines Holon as a self-organizing, dissipative structure that is simultaneously a whole and a part of a larger whole, and ultimately of a holarchy of holons. End note. He acts as a lens of comprehensibility, me to world, world to me, viz., through him as a medium, I can understand world and it me. Thus he decodes each of us as message to the other, like a translator speaking both our languages. 91, J98. I'll now put forth a strange theory. The secret Christians, although a persecuted minority, illegal and in hiding, are the rightful inhabitants in the sense of heirs to the kingdom. The ostensible world is not their world, but the ostensible world is fraudulent, only seeming anyhow. There is a world within a world. a genuine invisible latent one within the spurious visible ostensible one. They are coaxial, and it is the physical language of the genuine invisible latent one that is my language, which is why my relationship to the ostensible world is one of total alienation, Fremdheit, Geworfenheit, Unheimlichkeit. I am a citizen of another kingdom entirely, one that had at that moment communicated with me. Ah, I knew more, crucially more, than the girl said. She did not say secret or illegal, but, as I recently realized, I knew this. Only a fellow secret, illegal Christian is supposed to see the fish sign, as a message requesting an answer. I could not give her my answer. She had left. But I knew the answer. It was, yes, I am. 91J, 101A. Through the ACT lens grid, the world makes sense. The soteriological scheme revealed makes the world mine, and no longer fremd and unheimlich. This means that for me, the Christ drama is familiar and comprehensible, and reality founded on it and derived from it is my reality, whereas otherwise, it is not mine. And I am a stranger in a strange land. This fact tells me something about myself. It tells me what my narrative is, the story into which I fit. This is as much a story about me as it is about Christ and world. I had not known that until 274, but then I knew it. I understood world, but also I understood myself. The golden fish sign reflected back to me, as a mirror, my own hidden real nature. This can never be denied by me about myself. Hence, when I read Luke that night, I read what seemed to be my own writing. This is a great mystery and miracle. It is world's salvation and my own. Christ reconciles me to world and world to me. The language can be read through him. I think this is the essence of it. When all the mystification and false leads are edited out, this for me is the true point. 91.1. Dream, Thursday night, June 11th, 1981. I am with Nancy. She is behaving unusually. She is very active and energetic. I am told that she took something, a medication. She now has an additional mind or psyche in her, that of a man. The names John and Bill are mentioned, and there is some reference to the ending of the BTA novel. I want to take the medication too, so it will happen to me. The medication is shown me. It is in a cylinder or carton on which writing appears. I can't read the small print. The only word I can read is the name of the medication, or food, or drug, etc. It is Dithion. I can't remember much else, except that for a very long time, I am sweeping up what appear to be crumbs that are scattered all over the floor, sweeping carefully and thoroughly, and with great effort, as if this is a major task. This later makes me think of the general confession in the Episcopal Mass. We are not fit to gather the crumbs from under thy table. Normally, I reject the idea of sweeping up the crumbs, from what I guess is the messianic banquet. But in the dream, I am doing it willingly, although it is a difficult task. Later, there is something to do with either Nazi Germany or Israel. I see highly accurate drawings of complex weapons, very daring advanced weapons. I am struck by the ingenuity of their design. Later, I think that this may refer to Israel's airstrike on the Iraqi nuclear power station and also to the Uzi. Dithion does not use die in the sense of splitting asunder, because Nancy's mind has not split asunder. Another adventitious mind has entered her brain and is with hers. Two human minds, then, hers and John's or Bill's, form Dithion, which I break down to 2, God, ultimate particle or entity. The closest English word is Dithism, which means belief in two gods, as with Mani. I have never heard it other than bitheism, not ditheism. Di, theo, and an are, of course, Greek. I had not known until I looked it up that di is definitely Greek and not Latin. Bi would be Latin. I recall that I had thought several times after writing BTA that Bill, if he is based on anyone, is based on Nancy. So obviously, BTA is pointed to. Then Russ's letter came Thursday, in which he says that Bill and Tim united form Christ, rather than Christ entering Bill. Russ sees BTA as depicting Tim returning from beyond the grave to enter Bill's mind or brain, out of which two human minds, Christ, is formed. Neither Bill nor Tim alone is Christ. The attributes that make up Christ, Russ says, are depicted in the novel as disparate, scattered, but are unified at the end by Tim's sacrifice and return. As far as I know, this is a theological idea never before advanced. Russ's analysis comes from my letter to him, in which I say that upon rereading BTA, it strikes me that Christ, not Tim Archer, returned to Bill and entered his brain, that I feel Christ is distinctly present, that Bill is really Christ. Russ disagrees. Some of Christ is in Bill, some in Tim, and some in Angel, and some in Edgar Barefoot, for that matter. And these separate scattered elements are none of them, nor all of them, Christ, until Tim's self-sacrifice, his death and return, whereupon Bill and Tim are Christ, which explains why I felt that Christ was present in and as Bill at the end. I had, in writing the novel, never intended to say that Tim returning to Bill would, the syzygy would, constitute Christ. But, as I say, when I reread the novel, I said, it is Christ. It is Christ, all right. But it is indeed Tim and indeed Bill, and together they form Christ. This is exactly what the dream, the night before I received Russ's letter, alludes to regarding Nancy and Dithion. The man's psyche entering hers to be in her brain with hers. The precog aspect of the dream is only of minor interest. What is important is the concept that two human psychoi fused together form Christ, that somehow Christ is divided up, distributed, and must bring together his parts. Does this pertain to me and Thomas? Thomas was, is, a human like me, but Thomas and I joined together in one brain, as they were, are, forms Christ, i.e., a Dithion, the two-part God. To repeat, die cannot mean sundered, since two psychoi joined. There was not a splitting but a coming together in the BTA novel and in me in 2374. Also again, I dream in Greek. And again I see writing. I think this idea somewhat resembles Teilhard's idea of convergence into point omega, Christ. Russ concludes his letter by saying, all of which establishes that your talent and your conscious mind are, to some extent, two separate things, which is frightening, awesome, etc. Thus he sees, apparently, an application of this dual psyche to me. I do not have to now write a novel built around this concept of Dithion, because I have already done so, BTA. But, as I say, and as Russ realizes, this, i.e., the idea of Dithion, was not my conscious goal, point, or intention in the novel. The dream was so obviously supernatural as to be grimly so. It was not a serene and pleasant dream. Nancy was so filled with energy that she was, it struck me in the dream, pure energy unleashed, not the energy of a person. Except for the possible affinity to Teilhard's idea of convergence to and in point omega, Christ as the goal of the universe, this idea is new, and not one I have ever entertained regarding Thomas and all of 2374. I guess my reaction to the dream was one of terror when I woke up, moderated by Russ's letter when I read it later on. This dream, even without Russ's letter, but more so with his involved, ranks with anything that has happened to me starting in 274. It is a disclosure that is so profoundly vast that I can scarcely endure it. It is as if the dream answers the question, how do you get cause Christ? By what is almost a technological answer, as witness the schematics of the advanced weapons. It is fortunate and crucial that the dream made it clear that in no sense had the Godhead split, that die meant asunder, but meant rather two. This may well be a neologism, coined to express a concept never expressed before. And yet, it is the theme of BTA. As Russ says, I am sure his analysis of BTA is right and mine is wrong. The dream confirms him. We have here a new divine revelation, and, as I say, the novel that expresses it has already been written. Timeo, libera me domine in die illa. Note, Latin. I am afraid. Deliver me, O Lord, on that day. Adapted from the Requiem Mass. End note. We are now into the technical details of how the parousia is being accomplished. It resembles one theory, that an inner Christ consciousness will occur, rather than the reappearance of an anthropomorphic figure, but with a totally new and unexpected and fundamental modus operandi. The fusion of a given extant living human psyche, plus a resurrected psyche, apparently of a former living person, the right match, trait for trait. I would assume, not on a random basis. This, then, is not reincarnation, but a tandem psyche, oddly like what I present in Scanner. It would certainly explain why I couldn't figure out if I had been invaded by an adventitious psyche. I had been, or if it were a former self intrinsic to me. Apparently it was not. Also, this would explain why I could not tell if it was human, it was, or divine, e.g. the Holy Spirit. It was human, but the result of the combination with my psyche was essentially supernatural. And this explains why it seemed to be someone from beyond the grave. I think it was, which is why I thought of Jim Pike or Tony Boucher. I guess these are the first fruits, the saints, the first to be resurrected at the end days. Here again in the dream, the motif of the substance eaten reappears. The pink margarine cube with the writing on it, apparently symbolic of the host. The term, the concept, Dithion, is the complete, absolute, total, accurate, definitive, final, ultimate explanation of 2374. This one word conveys it all, and the concept may be unknown in religious and theological history. It is a concept that I would never have reached on my own. I have had over 7 years to work on my exegesis and never arrived at it. Russ did, vis-a-vis BTA. But one could say, maybe Russ is wrong. He is not. No, it is not a unitary psyche. It is twain. It is Dai. And because it is Dai, it jointly perceives two signals. This explains the second signal. Two psyches, two signals. And the parallaxis that permits the set ground discrimination. Just as bicameral means two, Dithion means two. And the on refers to ho-on. Why did I never think of it before? Two psyches, two signals, set and ground, which the twin psyches blend together. One sees set, the other sees ground. So it is essential that they do remain die or twain asunder. If they merged into one psyche, they would no longer perceive, receive two differing signals, no longer be able to do a set ground feature extraction. This is a totally new kind of mind. Twin push-pull psyches working in tandem, more than set ground. Two worlds, spatiotemporal, based on a common essence. And the common essence can be perceived as archetypal constants, common to both signals or worlds. What I call archetypes, or Ida, are those elements common to both signals, perceived by both psyches? What overlaps is present in both worlds and to both psyches? Thus, a wholly different kind of world is perceived by this double but mutually differing reception. It requires two parallel psyches working in unison to perform the meta-abstraction.